Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer. Today, joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the first news story of today. And us, being the IRR, have put out a statement about our plans to contact the vice chancellors of universities across the country to ask them if they intend to forcibly classify their staff by race should individuals decline to self-classify. Well, why is this a pertinent issue right now? Well, because the new employment equity sectoral numerical targets that government has formulated will essentially require businesses and universities, as well as other institutions, to enforce these targets across the institution or for racial and gender representativity. This doesn't just affect white South Africans, it will affect all South Africans, because any group or gender or whatever mix you can see can be subject to enforcement of these regulations. These new quotas have been, I'm reading from our statement here, these new quotas, dishonestly labeled targets to avoid specific legal challenges, are due to come into effect later this year and mandate both public and private sector employees to prepare for compliance and coercive enforcement by the state. Failure to comply could result in penalties of up to greater than 1.5 million rand or 2% of annual turnover for first-time offenders. They also create a huge amount of potential for abuse by corrupt officials, because government will be able to exempt certain institutions, which, as you can imagine, that sort of power would allow the government essentially to have a loaded gun to the head of every single institution in the country if it can't fulfill these demographic targets. Herman, why are we targeting universities specifically? What exactly is the point of this?
So universities are explicitly included in the entities, sectors, businesses, areas, whatever you want to call it, that will be affected by these racial quotas. Now, the problem is that if we are going to look at one point in South Africa, or in actually any society, where merit and the pursuit of excellence should be uncompromisingly pursued and put as the number one priority, it is at our universities, it is in academia, it is in our education system, because that is where excellence is bred, at least to the degree that it, you know, is formalized in a qualification structure. So now we are in a situation where if the universities have to carry out these race audits, because let's call them what they are, they are race audits, then they will supply forms, the so-called EEA1 form, to their staff, their administrative staff, their academic staff, and individuals will need to tick a box: white, black, colored, Indian, which ironically are the exact four categories that the Population Registration Act of 1950 created until its repeal in 1991. The idea is that then the form triggers self-classification, that it is not the state classifying these people, it is these people saying, okay, I am classifying myself according to a specific race. But the problem is there's no other or choose not to answer or opt out. Our question then to the universities, all 26 public universities, is this: will you force your staff to fill out these forms, will you force them to self-classify, which then no longer merits the label self-classification? And if they refuse to classify, will you forcibly classify them? Are you willing to resurrect the Population Registration Act's pencil tests and say, you refuse to participate in our race audit, we will now audit you on the behalf of the state? And these are organs of state who have the constitutional obligation of non-racialism. And the question, therefore, is, will they indulge this backdoor resurrection of the Population Registration Act, particularly in the context of being institutes of higher learning, where merit, excellence are supposed to be bred and first and foremost should be the focus of those activities rather than arbitrary racial and gender targets? And I think it's very important. This isn't a defense of minority rights. There have already been cases in various sectors, from the legal fraternity to educational institutions, where racial sports teams, where racial targets have ensured that competent women, competent Black South Africans, competent colored South Africans were excluded, even though they would have classified on merit bases, because that quota of their specific identity had already been filled. So we are here in a situation where if a young Black academic steps forward with brilliance and she applies to UNISA or University of Pretoria or wherever, but the quota of Black women is already filled, she will not get the appointment. And then it's also a non-racial issue in the sense that Black students, white students, colored students, Indian students will now be subjected to academic learning from individuals who are not the leaders in their fields. They are just proximately leaders in their fields with the right gender and race. It is perverse, it is disgusting, and as organs of state, these universities deserve to be put on the spot. They deserve to say, yes, we are sacrificing merit and excellence in the future of young South Africans to meet these arbitrary race targets. We need them to say that explicitly, or to go the other way and say, actually, we're going to take this to the government. We're going to take this to Parliament. We're going to say we cannot undermine our own function in this disgusting way. But it is a binary. It is either the Population Registration Act or the IRR's No More Race Laws Bill. That's the choice facing South Africans, and we thank the government for these perverse, these ridiculous targets, because it helps us make the argument that they are slowly but surely just resurrecting the Population Registration Act in blackface.
To micromanage society like this is to destroy the lives of thousands of people, to make arbitrary bureaucratic rules essentially the determiner of people's potential in their lives. And it will not work to uplift people in this country who are not already included. It will hurt them. So it is counterproductive and it is malicious. All right, let us move on to our next story. We've had a lot of debate in the country, which I think has been very healthy, about the fiscus and where is the money going to come from. Currently, South Africa is paying quite a lot of money to service its debt costs. And that is money that we can't spend on various social programs. That is money that we can't spend on tax breaks. That is money we can't spend on police. So there have essentially been three main ideas in this debate over how to make up the shortfall. The one is that we have a VAT increase. Now, there's been a lot of opposition to that, and it has collapsed. So that's not on the table anymore. There are two other ideas. These are proposed by the EFF and MK predominantly. And I'm sure some in the ANC are very keen towards this one. That is a wealth tax. And the other alternative, which has been proposed by the IRR, by the DA, by the Freedom Front Plus, by other organizations in the country, is to cut spending. So we're going to talk a little bit about why this wealth tax is not a solution. And Enoch Godongwana, in responding to a parliamentary question about the effects of a wealth tax, has talked about why it's not a great idea. Data from SARS says there are 2,850 individuals in South Africa with net assets of more than 50 million rand, who have in total 245 billion in local assets and 150 billion in foreign assets. However, Enoch Godongwana has revealed that this is a group who can very easily move. This is a group who can leave the country relatively at a moment's notice. I mean, if you've got millions of rands in assets, it's pretty easy to move overseas. You probably don't even have to work. He points out that South Africa already has a variety of taxes on wealth, including estate duty, donations tax, securities transfer tax, transfer duty on real estate transfers, and all real estate taxes, which are taxed at a municipal level through property rates. Basically, we actually already have probably maxed out what we can feasibly get from a wealth tax. And if we tried to increase it more, not only would it probably not raise as much money as you want, but even if you could make it work perfectly, it's not enough money to fill the holes in South Africa's budget in a really big way. Because once you take people's assets, well, firstly, they're not going to invest more into assets in the future because they're scared they might lose them. And secondly, those assets are then gone. They're already yours. So, you know, it's kind of like almost a one-time deal. It's not like taxing income where it's kind of every year a new thing, which means that, there are many reasons, but these are some of the reasons why wealth tax is not a solution and we have to cut spending. Herman, am I right or am I off base?
No, absolutely right. And the problem is if we look at places where wealth taxes have been tried, they have quietly been dumped in about 90% of those cases. I think one of the most prominent ones being in France, where they tried a wealth tax. It was supposed to bring in X billion. It brought in way below that target, and they quietly had to drop it because it was just nonsense. And if we look at stuff like capital gains tax and a progressive scaling income tax, we're already, if we get to the question of paying your fair share, we're already in a system where every single tax lever is switched to a position to be relatively favorable to the poor and to be as extractive as possible to the wealthiest. Now, the problem with that mobility of that wealth, as you mentioned, is these are also the people who can afford very skilled lawyers, lawyers who can ensure that assets are moved into new forms of ownership, whether it be trusts or whether it be company assets, there are so many legal avenues that could be, with the right funding, explored to make sure that those assets nominally vulnerable to a wealth tax could be repackaged to no longer be that sort of vulnerable asset. What will then happen is one of two things. Well, either we will sit in a situation where a damaging tax has led to wealth being sort of effectively hidden, incentivizing tax evasion and avoidance, or we will be in a situation where the wealthy just take their stuff and leave. And actually not to third point is that the bracket of what counts as wealth will need to be expanded downwards. That is a very, very simple bar to cross. Once the idea is that people of a specific wealth status have a duty to give more of what they have to the state. Once that principle is established, in a country with a stagnant economy and declining GDP per capita, the people who qualify as rich will essentially stretch down into the middle class, and it will make sure that any aspirational momentum you have in your economic sort of struggle as an individual becomes subject to some sort of revenue-hungry taxman. And then just finally, as you mentioned, there's another option on the table. Gabriel Krauser, the IRR fellow and colleague, did exceptional research over the last 2 years, published in our Blueprint for Growth papers when it comes to public finance, on the fact that South Africa's main problem isn't revenue, it is spending. One of the examples that he gives is we can eliminate BEE premiums in public procurement. If that is brought to 0%, the money that the taxpayer hands over to the government every year will reduce by 150 billion rand could be saved every year. If we just get rid of those premiums through licit and illicit means, we can save that money. That is more than enough to cover the shortfall that the axed VAT hike now can't do. But it is also enough to drop VAT on Gabriel's calculations to 11.5%, which would immediately free up consumer spending across your economy. So you are absolutely right. We faced three options. VAT has been defeated. Now this wealth nonsense has to be defeated for the charade it is. It won't, if it starts as a wealth tax, it won't stay a wealth tax. It'll just become a middle class tax, which would eradicate our consumer base even further. We have to tell the politicians, at some point, we're going to cut your pocket money. You cannot just tax and tax and tax and spend and spend and spend. We've been trying that since 2008. Thanks, Pravin Gordhan. It hasn't worked.
Yes. And there's going to be a sort of false attempt here to say, well, the only thing we can cut, the only thing we can get rid of is services for the poor. And then when there are fewer teachers, when the hospitals aren't staffed properly, government will say, well, it's because we didn't raise the VAT, or it's because we didn't do the wealth tax, or something like that. But that's a lie. The truth is the money can come from paying these tenders to politically connected individuals, these inflated prices that the BEE system has created. Instead of funneling the money to those who already have made it, we should instead funnel that money back to South Africans. It is not
and a we choice don't have to
cutting services for the poor.
And we don't have to theorize about these instances. We can just read the news. What's it? Laptops, 22 laptops or something for 22 million rand or something like that. Just 2-3 weeks ago. I remember a year or two ago, breathalyzer straws at Transnet that were supposed to cost 27 cents a straw, cost 27 rand a straw, a 10,000% markup. We're looking at mops costing thousands of rands. We're looking at knee pads at Eskom costing thousands of rands. It's not like we are pretending, oh, there are these savings, and if we can just find them, it would be better. They are concrete examples day in, day out of money that gets revenue collected by SARS, the only bit of government that seems to be working is the one that takes the money from its citizens, I wonder why, and then funnels it to this sort of nonsense, unproductive spending that we can actually point at and identify. This isn't airy-fairy, fuzzy think tank, oh, we wonder what would the case be. This is day-to-day rands that could go elsewhere without compromising service delivery. We can avoid any new tax, VAT, or wealth.
All right, let's move on to our last story. Speaking about the crime situation in KZN, the Lieutenant General of the Police Commissioner Nhlanhla Mkhwazane has said that he's worried about the long-term effect on public safety of a declining police force in light of a growing population. He says that staff losses resulted in a large number of police personnel leaving the police force in KZN. He says they've declined from a high of 25,000 police officers in the province in previous years to a current total of around 19,600. This is responsible for policing 12.4 million people in KZN, which is a number that is growing not at an incredible rate, but still, you know, is higher than it was years ago. And this is in line with a broader trend in South Africa, which is that the number of police officers in the country has not kept pace with population growth at all. The police have found themselves under-resourced, under-trained, and under-led. And he blames largely the rise of the private sector being able to pay police officers more for this, but he also blames people who need VIP protection hiring away experienced and trained police officers to serve as their bodyguards. Herman, what do you make of this? I think he's identifying problems. He's not identifying the causes particularly well.
Yeah, no, I think it is quite disingenuous, and it is sinister in a real way, saying that people making free choices about what income they seek to legally earn with their desirable skills are somehow at fault for wanting to do that. I think there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong for someone looking at a job in the police and a job in private security and saying, I'm going to get paid better in private security, better benefits. Let me go work there. More income. I can look after my loved ones, and my family.
Not just the pay, because that's an issue he identifies as, we don't, you know, we're capped in how much we can pay. It's also how you're led, how the organization works. Yep. You know that if you go into the police, you're going to be fighting against the system. You're going to be fighting against some corrupt cops. You're going to be fighting against bad leadership. Whereas in the private sector, you know, there's the chance at least that you're going to have a good boss, that you're going to have a positive work environment. The people who are good cops in the work in the police service currently have to struggle against the tide that is pushing in a negative direction.
So the problem with the police in general in South Africa isn't primarily numbers. Numbers are, of course, one of the components of a failing police service. You can't get the recruits, and the recruits you get aren't the quality you need. Now, there are ways around that by simply, number one, making sure that you offer something, whether it is in monetary or alternative value offering terms, you offer something that people would freely choose as a route of public service and as earning an income. Wanting to earn an income is a noble human fine thing. If we're going to start demonizing that, then frankly, I think people should touch grass more. So the number one issue is, can funding be solved? Can we make sure that the public who funds the police see in the police something worth funding? Because the moment you can win that argument, taxpayers become relatively collaborative. Most South Africans, I would argue, are happy to pay tax for certain purposes when they can see that tax being applied and spent well. So the first thing is, can you prove that you are prudent in the money that you do receive so that the public can look at you and understand paying you isn't just flushing money down the drain? Then you must also make sure that you have a chain of command structure that makes the entire system operable. I've spoken to retired and senior police officers who say the chain of command in South Africa has gone to hell. There isn't accountability, there isn't strong leadership, there isn't clear oversight, and that means that it is just institutional paralysis that quite often leads to the more malicious abuses of police power, simply because the ranking superiors aren't on top of their brief enough to make sure that those below them are motivated, led, and skilled to do the job they must. But then finally, I think the big problem in South Africa's law and order system, when we talk to the police, is the fact that our forensics laboratories are in an embarrassing state. We are in a country with massively high gender-based violence rates, sexual crimes, violent crimes, murders. All of these things rely on a forensic capacity that the police has simply overseen as a declining thing in their ability to fight for law and order. So, yeah, the numbers are fine, and the numbers are an issue, and it's fine to comment on the numbers. But if you're going to diagnose the problems, make sure you diagnose all of them. And if you're going to try and come up with solutions, it's not going to be, oh, people should go less and shouldn't go into private sector security where they can earn a better income. That's bad. That's sort of the implication being, let's do something about it. No. Fix the things that are there to fix, that anyone with a basic grasp of the system can see are broken and need fixing from the position of statal competence.
Oops, sorry, clicked the outro button a little bit too early there. But no, I agree completely. And with that, we hope you found the show interesting. I hope that we will see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.